Mark Azoulay is an industry leader in psychotherapy and men's mental health. He's helped countless guys get back on their feet, deepen their relationships, and excel in their lives. Now he's taken all that he has learned and is sharing it with you. In each episode, Mark will interview an expert in the field of masculinity and men's work. We'll cover topics such as emotional intelligence, masculine identity, anger management, financial health, trauma recovery, marriage and divorce, ethics, and spirituality. Tune in and become a better man.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Mark Azoulay, and I'm here with Ryan Penley. He's the founder of Rock Bottom Recovery and a self-defined Rock Bottom alumni. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm in recovery myself, so I always love spotlighting people that have been there, you know, and recovered and gotten better and gotten stronger. And I think especially for men, this is often the thing that gets us into doing the self-work. It's usually an addiction gone bad.
Yeah, it's a good place to start. If you're wondering where to get better, you know, issues with substance abuse, even though maybe your life hasn't been completely torn down by it, you can damn sure get better by, you know, either reducing it or considering like just cutting it all out, you know, completely, you know what I mean?
Yeah, any kind of those like discipline challenges, I think, are really helpful, right? Especially for battling something like drinking or pot smoking or whatever, right? It can be really critical to just like get a handle on life, you know, and have more decision around some of these substances.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, when I talk to somebody that's maybe just kind of like been flirting with the idea and they kind of do like maybe a month, like, you know what, I'm just, you know, I'm going to cut back and just like see how it goes. I almost every time I find that they find a lot of like positive results. They find a lot of, you know, good elements of their life, or at least, you know, this additional clarity, if you will, right, at the very least. And then, you know, I think if they were to string together enough days, enough weeks, and maybe a few months, they'd start to notice like some of the massive changes that can happen by just not like filling your body with poison. You know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, I'm like, I don't necessarily, my mission's not to demonize or you know, like all drinking, you know, just because I personally have, you know, no moderation like whatsoever. So like, I do know that it's a possibility to enjoy it. Not an option for me, but, I do think, I think that it can be definitely a source, or at least the beginning of getting better for any guy that just wants to make themselves better. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we're in like a sober trend right now. You know, a lot of the Gen Z clients and stuff that I work with are actually not as interested in alcohol in the same way. I think they're more into like psychedelics, maybe more into marijuana, but alcohol seems to be kind of trending out with the younger generation. And I'm in Colorado where there's a lot of professional athletes, and most of them are sober, not because they're addicts, right? Like you and I might be, right? But because they want just to be at that peak performance level. So I think it's something where there's a lot more conversation around it, whether you know, have a problem or not, right? It's something certainly to look at and determine, hey, is this working with my life?
Yeah, it seems like an obvious place to start, to become, well, like, you know, like I had mentioned, you know, to become at your peak. It's an easy thing to cut out to make a massive step in that direction. And now, you know, like a flip side of that coin, if you got a problem with recognizing that a few beers every night isn't holding you back performance wise, then you might have a problem. So like, if you're telling yourself the narrative that like somehow you rest better or the beers make you, like they somehow increase your recovery, that's BS. And so, if you're buying that narrative, then you might want to be in the conversation of maybe admitting that there's something wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're attached to it more, right?
I think exactly. Right.
Like on now, what alcohol does for the body, you know?
Yeah. It's like, I have a pitcher of beer, like at least twice a week, and it makes me just play so much better. It's like, you're lying to yourself, man. And you're probably drinking a hell of a lot more than that pitcher, you know? So.
Absolutely. Well, so let's dig into your story. I'm curious, like what got you into this work? What was your story of recovery? Share with the audience.
Yeah, man. You know, I I started like, I think like maybe a lot of men might start. Like I had a few beers at a party. I was underage, of course. I was, you know, a teenager, and I was having conversations with cute girls. I was like talking to girls at school or that were, you know, from school at these parties. And I had, maybe I was funny, maybe I wasn't, but I had enough confidence to at least try. And so I was like, this is awesome, man. You know, like I talked to this girl or maybe I got a number and it's just like, I'm going to do this all the time. And then I think that at that point in your life, you feel so very, you know, there's so little repercussions. I mean, you pretty much, you're indestructible at that age. So you're not getting a hangover. None of these things are affecting you. You don't have a job that you don't have to show up to. So it's like, it's pure, you know, it's pure party, right? Like, you know, there's the amount of responsibility in your life is very low. So the cost of taking part in that kind of behavior, it makes sense. And in, you know, and with a younger mind, men, you know, we get motivated by like the increased confidence, or at least the increased perceived confidence. And so it's like, man, you know, I had a few beers. I'm the life of the party. So this is what I'm going to be doing, you know, as much as I possibly can. And so, you know, that's where it started, but there's no doubt that in my family history, I have, you know, my mother's an addict and alcoholic. My father's also an addict and alcoholic. He's been clean, but because of his history, we're estranged. I don't have a relationship with him. And so it's the history of my addiction is I don't want to call it standard, but it makes sense to a lot of professionals. They're like, ah, there it is. You know, now a gift of all of that really is that I never really bought into it. The explanation that it was anybody's fault but my own. And that was a gift throughout the whole process. But then, you know, if you want to add other elements to, you know, somebody that's more likely to become an alcoholic or a drug addict, I moved to Las Vegas when I was 21, right? So here I am. I'm in the belly of the beast. Yeah. I'm at the epicenter of all overindulgence,
vice, and, right? Vice City. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. And so it's all available. Here I am, you know? And so I had money, I had everything at my disposal. And, you know, and then I would say that, you know, it was an injury that led to like a prescription of a ton of narcotics, like enough pills to kill a rhinoceros, seriously. And then, so I was an instant addict. And that was a major milestone in this journey, right? So here I am. This doctor is giving me my medicine. You know, I'm like, oh, I need this. This is my medicine. These are, you know, I have to take these pills to get to the day. And then, you know, I wasn't the only one at this point in time. This is around 2008. So there's a lot of people that were in this opioid epidemic. And, you know, it might be still considered going on, maybe not, but it was a real thing. So, you know, that here I'm in Las Vegas, I've got this, you know, massive prescription of narcotics, you know, it was a recipe for disaster, man. And so that journey developed into, you know, I got fired, and then there's some things, and I lightly touch on those things because they weren't even close to the bottom that I talk about so often, the rock bottom, right? So I found myself in Colorado, and you are
all right,
and you're part of the nation, right? I left Vegas. I'm like, oh, I got to get out of here. So what did I had gotten away from the pills. Nor did I have the money for the pills and that type of thing. So, you know, once that developed, I moved to Colorado, and then it was like, okay, I say, you know, I mention often that in these days, I didn't say no often. I didn't say no too much, right? So it was like cocaine, you know, crack, heroin. It didn't matter really. Everything was on the table. I myself starting to, it started to take a toll on me physically. You know, I had mentioned earlier, you know, when you start off as a teenager, you can drink, you know, several beers and you wake up, your body bounces back like nothing. It's like, oh man, you know, no big deal. Time goes on. You continue that behavior and you're going to start to take a toll on that, on yourself biologically. Right. So I did, and I developed diabetes, as a result of my copious drug intake and steady diet of booze, right? So here I am. I developed diabetes. I'm in complete denial that I have it. And then I go into a diabetic coma. And so I'm in Colorado. I was at Estes Park. Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So small park, town. Right.
Small town.
Yeah. And so there was no way to help me there.
No real medical.
Fly me down. Yeah. Exactly. There's not much around. Yeah. So here I am, you know, I'm incoherent. Mm-hmm. I'm on a helicopter to the closest town, you know, and you know, the down the hill, right? So they had to get me down the hill to Fort Collins. Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. It was Longmont. Mm-hmm. And they had to give me triage. And my body temperature went down to 85 degrees, and you know, most people kind of they consider that dead. You know, I was done. You know, and so, you know, at this point in time, people are saying, you know, oh, that's when you turned it around. That's when you know, you said, man, that's it. I got to turn this around. No. I suppose if there's a lot of things that I am, I'm not a quitter. I had to make sure that I would, you know, I went down the old staircase to make sure it was the complete cellar of rock bottom town, USA. And I got down there, after coming back to Florida and just diving down, into the bottle, for a few more years. And at that point I couldn't afford the drugs. So the cheapest thing out there, man, is just a plastic bottle vodka from your local liquor store. And that was, before, it was just a steady diet of that. All food groups led to one thing, grain alcohol. So you know, that's what led to a lot of problems with the law. Basically alienated everybody around me. And it started being undeniably bad. And so this point in my life, I knew the whole admitting that you have a problem thing, there was no denying it. I'm no fool. I looked around, things were bad, and I was on my way out if I continue that kind of behavior, you know.
Yeah, I want to pause you here, right, and talk about your mindset, because yeah, that rock bottom is god awful, right? And there's a lot of people that die. Right? There's a lot of people that never quite turn around. And I wonder, you know, it seems for many people, the deeper the rock bottom, in some ways, the harder it is to get back up, right? Because that gap, right, from drinking grain alcohol to being a functioning member of society, it's so far. And it can be really intimidating, right, to being like, oh my God, how am I going to ever get back to my life? But I'm curious, was there anything that helped you start moving forward, you know, pick yourself up and start to reverse course? Because that moment is powerful. I mean, magical or spiritual even, you know, it's a big moment.
Right. And so, you know, what's peculiar is that now, and I think most people do, they think about, well, what is that one moment? What was that particular instance? And I can say, I don't attribute it to any one thing. There were moments and milestones that were turning points. A very big one, and it didn't correlate to an immediate period of sobriety. It did not. However, looking back in the journey, man, it was a friend of mine. He came to check on me because I didn't show up for work. He got me a job, and I didn't show up for that job. So he showed up to my place. Here I am, drunker than a skunk, and he didn't shame me. I thought for sure, here it comes. He's going to lay into me. He's going to tell me what's going on. And, you know, he's going to give me a hard time, and I'm feeling all the shame and the guilt. He acknowledged that my refrigerator was only filled with alcohol. and so he didn't, I'm thinking he's going to pour it out. He's going to yell at me. Who knows? He doesn't say any of that. He just leaves it there. He walks over and he held my hand and he prayed for me. Hmm. And he just prayed. And it was, I felt a lot of weight lift off of my shoulders. And it wasn't necessarily like a Jesus moment. I didn't just like jump on a Christian bandwagon or anything like that. But it was the first time in my life I didn't feel the weight. I didn't feel the pressure. And that was a big, big deal. That was a major milestone in me thinking like, oh my God, I felt like I could breathe a little bit. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, that was... that was not the moment, but it was several moments like this where I felt this hint of success, a win. And that's really, I kind of noticed when I felt a little bit better, right? A little less hopeless. And then I just started kind of leaning into whatever it might be that aided in that sense of relief. And then I just compounded those little wins over and over and over again. It wasn't instantaneous, I can tell you that. And it came from a very deep and dark desperation. But yeah, those little tiny wins that I noticed, I leaned into that.
Yeah, I think that's big, right? And I'm hearing like the acknowledgement that it is a problem. It's not fun anymore. It's not party. It's not status. It's a problem. And it's something that you have to beat. And I just like that story of your friend, because what I'm hearing is that you got like non-judgment and forgiveness. You know, he wasn't judging you. He was like, hey, I'm here with you. We're going to go through this together.
Yeah. And he could have. I mean, he could. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of
things. He could close the door and walked right out, right? I mean.
He could have said, hey, man, guess what? You're fired. I'm never going to vouch for you again. I'm out of here, you know?
Yeah.
But he didn't. And then that was a blessing, man, for sure.
Yeah, that's a big moment. So we're going to move towards our first commercial break. When we come back, I want to hear more about how you started to recover from rock bottom, how you started to move forward, what those steps looked like, and some of the lessons that you may have learned along the way. If there's guys listening that are in a similar place or maybe are afraid of getting into a similar place, it's always great to hear from guys that have been down this path, you know, so you get a sense of, hey, this is what the terrain looks like, and it's not that you want to tread. So we'll go to first commercial break. If you're listening, hang on in there, and we will see you on the other side.
Follow Voice America at facebook.com/Voice America for juicy updates from your favorite radio shows and podcasts.
Men's Therapy Online is now accepting new members. Men's Therapy Online offers a solution to the lack of outlets for emotional expression, positive role models, and access to meaningful milestone experiences. In our post-COVID world, loneliness is at an all-time high. Men need consistent community. Our society is rapidly changing. Old models of masculinity are falling at the task of promoting emotional intelligence and meaningful connection. Men's Therapy Online offers tools and experiences designed to help the man who is struggling to balance traditional male roles and emotional fluidity. Whether you need to get back on your feet or take your life to the next level, Men's Therapy Online has your back. We help our members become a true 21st century man, a man who is not burdened by the rapid change of society, but who contributes to it honorably. If you're interested in signing up and finding your band of brothers, go to menstherapy.online to learn more. That's menstherapy.online. Start your journey today.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Men's Therapy Podcast with Mark Azoulay. To reach the show today, please call 866-472-5791. That's 866-472-5791. Or send an email to podcast@menstherapy.online or visit www.menstherapypodcast.com. Now, back to the Men's Therapy Podcast.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Mark Gazzolin, and I'm here with Ryan Penley. And we're talking about recovering from rock bottom. So I have this theory, Ryan, that I want to run past you, right? So, you know, I'm a psychotherapist, but I like to pride myself on not being a traditional kind of like lovey-dovey psychotherapist. I can be kind of a hard ass sometimes. And what I've seen with men is that I think all of us in our own way need to go through the darkness. right? What I've seen a lot of men's personal journey, and certainly mine and maybe even yours, doesn't start from love and hope and forgiveness and compassion. It often starts from fear or anger or spite or resentment. You know, we have that kind of dark side energy in us that gets us going. We then have to, you know, heal that and become a better man down the line. But there often is this kind of darkness that kicks off our personal work. So I'm curious, one, I guess, if that relates to you, and two, how would you define like the value of rock bottom, of that real like humbling moment where you did have to pick up the pieces for yourself?
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe what I'm hearing about the first question there is like, it's the call to adventure.
Yeah,
I think even as children, as young boys, young men, they want to play pirates. They want to dream of the call to adventure. You know, and this can look different for I think most men. And so I'm thinking about different variations or interpretations of that, right, as I'm saying these words. And so, you know, the trial by fire is a real thing. It's why we see it echoed so many times in so many stories. It's why we show up for Marvel movies. That's why we show up for these things. And so, you know, this is conjoined with the second part of your question here, is that the degree to which this hero is valued, the degree to which this hero is celebrated and admired, is in direct correlation with the trials and tribulations that he will go through, right? So there's so much value in that, right? And so I think that there's a compass inside of us that drives us to that, right? It's wanting to go, you know, bungee jumping and skydiving and all of these things. Those are brief moments, right? But if you were to expand the same feelings, right, the same kind of notions that kind of go through our psyche when we're pursuing these little stints of adventure, right? Like it's usually the same kind of, I guess it's the feeling, right? Like we all want to be the hero of the story. And I actually, you know, when you talk about the value of the hardships, right? Consider this, right? Like you pull a bow and arrow back, right? And you're an archer. Now, if you don't pull it back very far, the arrow doesn't do much. It's unnoticeable. Nobody really cares. And it gets considered like that doesn't count, right? However, if you pull that thing back and you launch it, right? And say you miss the target. Man, at least that thing's flying and people are looking and they're kind of anticipating, oh, damn, is it going to hit the bullseye? Oh, almost, you know, it's like, that's the epic part of the pullback is our trials and tribulations, right? And how far back that thing is pulled is in direct correlation, right? It relates to the story, right? And so when you've got that giant pullback, you get that giant rock bottom visit and everybody knows it. It's loud and clear. Like, oh man, that's tough. Look what he did to himself, you know, or man, he had, maybe it wasn't self-inflicted. Maybe it was something else that you bounced back from. We love that, right? All people, men and women, right? They love the comeback story. But you know, as men, I think we have a different value for it. I think it's built into us a little bit different. And I don't know if that comes from just historically, we've been always, you know, we've been the captains of the ships. We've been the ones, you know, leading the march historically, right? I don't know if it's because of that or if it's genetic, but I do know it has this value in us. And then when you ignore that or you don't necessarily realize it, meaning like you don't embrace that pullback, you avoid it, you hide from it, you just end up being an uneventful story, right? So it's all, there's many elements of the of this whole thing, and they all kind of link together, and it has to do with the pitfalls and the failures and the challenges. They're also directly linked into that story that we tell ourselves, and the call to adventure, and what makes up our character at the end of this journey that we call life. You know, I think that's what we're working toward, is like, you know, while we're in it, make it worthwhile, you know, make it exciting, give it a shot, you know? And so that's what I think, you know, to directly answer the second part of the question, it's like, that's the value in the pitfall, the trials and the difficulties, right? Is it makes your story.
Yeah, I agree, right? I think it points to deeper things that we need to work on. You know, I think there's a big practice in humility that I had from my rock bottom, and I imagine you had from yours. And I think it does take a man versus a boy to recognize weakness, right? And not to judge and not to be ashamed, but to be like, hey, I need to improve in X, Y, and Z category, right? I need to get my drinking under control. I need to make a little more money to support my family. I need to be more available for my partner. I need to, you know, be more confident and be able to lead, whatever it is, right? I think it takes a real man to see those things and to be like, okay, here's where we are. Here's the deck of cards I have. I'm going to try to play this game as best as possible, rather than what I think a more boyish response would be, would to be a victim, right? And be like, no, poor, pitiful me. I'm broken. I'm shattered. I'm never going to get better. And a lot of guys, they get stuck there. They get stuck in that victim mentality.
It's funny that you mentioned that, Mark, because I'll say, like, the biggest victim in the room is the last one to get better. Right. Yeah. So like you go into a room and it's like, I think we'll call it AA or something, any kind of a room. It's people are discussing their circumstances, and maybe everybody in the room's got absolutely horrendous circumstances and they're all suffering from substance abuse. The biggest victim in that room is so far from gaining traction, it's not even funny. Right. It's like, man, you got so much work to do to stop, you know, because the quicker you are to say, you know what? At the end of the day, I'm the one picking up that bottle. I'm the one, and I actually truly believe this about myself. You know, I snorted every damn pill. I didn't purchase every bottle, but I picked it up and put it to my lips. Nobody has ever actually like put drugs into my nose, right? Like, so it's always been me. And having that approach, you know, like you had mentioned, the victim thing is just, it's really delaying any real progress.
Yeah. Yeah. You talked earlier about taking responsibility, right? Taking responsibility for your life. And I think this is taking responsibility for your suffering and shortcomings, right? Which we all have. And then once you can do that, once you get your own house in order, then you can start to take on more responsibilities, whether that be a job or a family or, you know, an organization or leadership. I'm curious for you, once you got clean and sober, right? What responsibility did you take on? How did you make your life a better story, you know, a life worth living?
Yeah. So, you know, in the first segment there, I was mentioning like the small wins.
Yeah.
It didn't happen overnight. And usually those small wins, it's nothing to brag about. I was in bad shape, and these small wins, like it included, I'll just tell you that the first wins were like, I don't want to pick up that bottle for 15 minutes. And I failed. I failed. Right. And it didn't many times. So now say the few times I made it to 20 or 30 minutes, right. I couldn't necessarily go telling everybody, like, you know, oh, hey guys, yeah, I know I got this bottle of liquor in the break room, but I didn't drink it for 30 minutes. Like it was
over for 15 minutes, you know, it's a 15 minute chip.
Like, yeah. And everybody's like, you shouldn't be drinking at work, you idiot. And it's like, you know, those had to stack up, because if I didn't make it to 20 minutes, I couldn't make it to an hour. And so if I couldn't make it to an hour, I couldn't make it to a day. And so when you're in the trenches, those tiny and humbling, I wanted to say embarrassing, but humbling is a better way to frame it. You know, those humble, tiny victories that you can't really tell anybody about. I mean, you could, but like, you know, damn, you know, it's pretty messed up. So, you know, all I did was stack those up. Because like I had said, like the one, it turned into an hour, it turned into a day. And then, and this also, you know, if you want to look at it from something like, you know, some other elements, say one of your audience, he's a man and he doesn't necessarily have a problem drinking. I did the same thing physically. My body was complete wreck. And I started doing jumping jacks. And this is after I was a little bit sober, obviously. I wasn't out there just hammered trying to do jumping jacks. But like, I was like, I'm going to do 3 minutes of jumping jacks. I don't mean straight 3 minutes. I mean 3 minutes within 24 hours. So I did like maybe 40 seconds, you know, and then the next shot, it wasn't even 40 seconds. It was like 30. So I got there. And again, you know, that's not, you don't look on Instagram. There's not like sports influencers like, check it out, guys, I'm going to do 3 minutes of jumping jacks. And then that's the end of the video. It's like, it was kind of embarrassing. And then yet the next morning, I felt like I got hit by a truck. My ankles hurt. Mm-hmm. My knees hurt. And then, but here's the glory, right? The glory and the takeaway is that I did five. And then at one point I was shooting to do 1,000. And then you gain that momentum and you can own that momentum. And then you start to get something that you can be proud of. I mean, you know, nonetheless, you can be a little bit proud of those tiny wins as well, you know, personally, but they stack up and they grow exponentially, right? And I think that's a massive takeaway.
Yeah, I don't know if there's an easy answer for this, but and if you had it, it'd be like the golden key to everything, right? It's like, how do you keep going? How do you keep going? Because I talk to a lot of people, you know, either doing fitness journeys, you know, or doing recovery journeys or whatever. And that moment where, just like you said, it's like, fuck, I can only do 3 minutes of jumping jacks. I can't even do it every day. And I'm just wasted by the end of it is really humbling. And like you said, embarrassing, humiliating. You know, I know a lot of people that are overweight, they get on the treadmill and they're like, oh my God, I am so out of shape. You know, yeah. where I am now versus where I want to be is feels like miles and miles and miles away. And I think for a lot of people, that like initial mirror is really scary and really, it can defeat them. So again, I don't have the easy answer for this, but I am curious for you, like what keeps that momentum going? What kept you going when you were in that humble place, you know?
So I do have what I believe to be a pretty decent answer for that.
Yeah.
And I kind of came up with this after I put out my book and everything. This came post my book and my story and all that. And I believe that addicts make the world go round. Right. And so you wonder like, well, what the hell does that mean? Was Mother Teresa addicted to peace and benevolence? Right. Was Steve Jobs addicted to innovation? I would say strongly. Yeah. Like people were telling like Mother Teresa, like, hey, cut it out. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're not even eating. You're feeding these people or you're in this danger zone. And, you know, why are you helping these people? You put yourself at risk. And it's like, cause she was addicted to something that was cool. So I know that I'm an addict, right? I'm an addict. So I'm not going to fight that. What I am going to do is I'm going to lean into where my attention is, what sparks some of that. And for me, like kind of like physical fitness kind of helps. Like I lean into that. I have like I look at it and I'm like kind of, I admire it, you know, and that kind of thing. So everybody has something that they're interested in. So if you are a person and you're an addict, you're suffering for something, and my best move for you is get addicted to something useful, something that's not selfish, and just lean into it. Now, say it is like absolutely horrific. You do the 3 minutes of jumping jacks and you're just like, well, damn, that was just, I could not hate anything more. Like, cause I mentioned my body was in pain, but my brain kind of liked it. Mm-hmm. So say you do it and you despise it mentally. All right. We'll try swimming and then or tennis or something. Right. And so you just keep plugging away at something. What I wouldn't recommend is like, you know, set like digging your heels into something that you despise. Mm-hmm. Right. Like if it's something that like you absolutely horribly can't stand, you're not going to last too long. So say, but that's not the same thing as it being difficult, right? Like it's like, okay, that was hard, but I kind of liked it and I kind of suck right now, but I think maybe I could do it again. Like that's where you want to lean in. But if you do something and you're like, okay, I hate this. And I want to get the hell out of here as soon as possible. And I can't, there's nothing worse that I could imagine doing with my time. All right, maybe give something else a shot. You know what I mean? And so then I think if you keep searching, you're going to find something that you think is cool, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the ticket, right? Is like getting good at being bad at stuff. You know, and I think it requires... Yeah. that you do enjoy it to some extent, or you at least respect people that are at a higher level than you, or maybe you have a hero in the field or something. But it is this idea of being good at being bad. I've found humor to be a big one. If I need to be able to laugh at myself, right? If I'm doing it. So for my thing, it was CrossFit, right? And it's like, I'm there, and in CrossFit, you like yell out your score at the end of the workout, right? You yell publicly, like how many reps you did or what your weight was. And, you know, in the beginning, I'm like, you know, 30 pounds under like the 55-year-old women, right, that are there. And I'm just like, all right, put it on the board, 25 pounds. I did it three times, you know? And like, I needed to have that humor with it in order to move through that. And if I'm going to laugh at myself, I can keep myself going. But I find if I take it too personally, then it can destroy me. You know, I can get in my head too much.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, man. And if you can keep it light, that's definitely, it's going to be advantageous for you, you know, to have, to not take yourself too seriously when you know you're about to look like a fool.
Yeah, exactly. And I think having other people to laugh and like other people on the path can be really helpful too. I found that community is critical. I mean, whether that be like the AA rooms, right, or workout buddies, or even a coach or a trainer, you need to pay for that, it's totally fine. I think having community is really critical, because it can be so easy to feel like you're alone in it, and to feel like you're like the most effed up person on the planet, right? Your addiction is the worst and you're never going to get out of it, or you're the most out of shape person ever. It can be really helpful, because just like you said, there's no one on Instagram posting about their 3 minutes of jumping jacks. You know, they're posting about breaking records and doing, you know, pull-ups for 3 days in a row, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like 2,000 pull-ups. Like, damn, man. I'm holding on for dear life. I got half.
Yeah. Like, I can't even get one, right? If I got one pull-up, that would be a big win for me, you know?
Yeah, that's for certain, man.
Yeah, so we're going to move to our final commercial break. When we get back, we're going to talk directly to the listeners, giving away some tips, some ideas, some tricks, things that can get them started on this path of healing and recovery, stuff that you've learned along the way that are easy, accessible, and that people can start right now. So if you're enjoying the show, give us a like, give us a share, give us a subscribe. We are broadcasting video as well on Facebook and YouTube, so check us out there. We're building those platforms up. So share it, give it out to people that need to hear this message. And when we come back, we'll talk directly to you, and you can get started with the challenge right away.
Voice America is on LinkedIn. Connect with us today.
Men's Therapy Online is now accepting new members. Men's Therapy Online offers a solution to the lack of outlets for emotional expression, positive role models, and access to meaningful milestone experiences. In our post-COVID world, loneliness is at an all-time high. Men need consistent community. Our society is rapidly changing. Old models of masculinity are falling at the task of promoting emotional intelligence and meaningful connection. Men's Therapy Online offers tools and experiences designed to help the man who is struggling to balance traditional male roles and emotional fluidity. Whether you need to get back on your feet or take your life to the next level, Men's Therapy Online has your back. We help our members become a true 21st century man, a man who is not burdened by the rapid change of society, but who contributes to it honorably. If you're interested in signing up and finding your band of brothers, go to menstherapy.online to learn more. That's menstherapy.online. Start your journey today.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Men's Therapy Podcast with Mark Azoulay. To reach the show today, please call 866-472-5791. That's 866-472-5791. or send an email to podcast@menstherapy.online or visit www.menstherapypodcast.com. Now, back to the Men's Therapy Podcast.
Welcome back. I'm here with Ryan Penley, and we're talking about humility. We're talking about recovery. We're talking about taking things one step at a time and building positive momentum. So we got a great, great conversation going, Ryan. I'm curious, what can our listeners do, right? They're inspired by your story. They're inspired by your work. What could they do right after this podcast to get that ball rolling?
Yeah, I actually have a nice little solution for that at a website, myrockbottomrecovery.com. I put together a 21-day challenge. And it's not necessarily so much, I call it a challenge, kind of like peak interest. However, I engineered it myself to be attainable. And so if you're at a standstill, or maybe even behind a standstill and you're moving backwards a little bit, like it's a good place to start. You know, as I had mentioned earlier, you have to kind of assess yourself and think about what you can attain. Because if you kind of mess this stage of goal setting up too much and you put the goal too far ahead of yourself, you're setting yourself up for failure. If you make it too easy, you're not interested enough. So there's like a sweet spot, kind of like a Goldilocks, kind of a place you want to begin. And so, but you do have to start somewhere. And if I were to put a blanket statement on where you start humbly, right? And just get a win, right? Because that win will turn into something a little bit larger, and then you stretch, and then those wins compound, and then you have exponential growth right at your feet, you know?
Yeah, I think that's great. And for our listeners, that link will be in the show notes. You can go ahead and click on that and check out his challenge. And yeah, I think the power of streaks is really important. You know, when I was kind of getting my ball rolling, I had a calendar, right, just posted right literally behind my monitor so I could look at it whenever I was working of, hey, here's a day where I'm not going to drink. Or for me, it was really smoking weed. So here's the day where I didn't smoke. Boom, X. You know, or here's a day where I meditate. That was a big part of my recovery. Okay, boom, cross it off.
Oh, nice.
And seeing the streaks going was really motivating because it's like, okay, all I have to do is this one thing today. Just have to do one thing today. And that was humbling because sometimes, like you said, I didn't even do that one thing, right?
Yeah.
But it was also very clarifying and simplistic, which I think is really helpful because I don't know about you, but when I was in my addiction, my life was very chaotic. So being able to kind of dial back into a very simplistic way of being was really healing for me of like, hey, do this routine, do this thing, like just get it done. That was very calming and soothing.
Yeah, keeping it simple, K-I-S-S, keep it simple, stupid. I mean, there's value there. There's value there. And so, you know, if you're getting pulled in too many directions, many times you can miss the mark. And so, yeah, if it's, I think it's beneficial to just shoot for maybe just one thing. And if you can do that, right, it keeps your eyes on the prize. And so, you know, you start to build this, and of course, complexity will come. And you'll gain abilities and skills and whatever, or just sober days, you know, because I don't know if you could consider sobriety as a skill set, but it is something that you can build a streak behind. And there's no shortage of evidence that streaks are a real thing. That's why you see it built into so many successful programs. You know, there's an element to that I think it should not be forgotten. And that's you got to celebrate it too, right? And so, you know, you see, like when you were marking those on your calendar, did you reward yourself?
Yeah. For me, it was massages, actually. I'd book a massage if I got like, you know, a month done or something. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, but that's such a key element of it. You know what I mean? And it could be by yourself or it could be with a team or a group. And so whatever that formula looks like for you, if you know that, you know, these are tools, right? One of my big tools is observation of myself. I try to gain an objective view. I do that by journaling every day. It gives me a point in the day that I can kind of take a step away from myself and kind of see where I'm at and make it another assessment, you know, because what gets measured gets better. And then there's a lot of truth there too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if we're talking where to begin, it's like there's going to be no shortage of maybe problems that any man will have in their life. But you got to be a little, you have to be pretty honest too, right? Like you had mentioned earlier, looking in the mirror. So maybe start with something small, right? Start somewhere that you can just do something. Because if it's just in the general direction of better, man, it's probably a lot better than what, where you were at, you know, just destroying yourself, you know, if you're talking about substance abuse, that's for certain.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I want to zoom out as we're kind of moving towards the end of this segment and talk about being a better man, you know, developing masculinity, growing up in a lot of ways. And the topic of this episode, right, is man up, sober up. And I think we have that kind of masculinity piece there in the title. So I'm curious for you, right? Like once you got these small wins, do you have more aspirational goals or maybe deep work goals or how did it transform who you were fundamentally? How did it transform you as a man?
Yeah, I'll say this, and I don't even know if it's like the best move to say this, but I didn't want my identity to be the sober guy.
Yeah.
Right. Like even now I'm thinking about a second book that's going to be Man Up, Level Up. Right. I want to move beyond the identity of, I'm sober and I've been sober this long. I would prefer that I have another title. And so it gave me something to keep chasing, because sobriety is fantastic. And without it, there's probably very little you can achieve if you're not sober. So check that box off pretty good. You know, now I'm always going to be in risk of, you know, succumbing to these addictions. And I know that. However, by having something, a goal to keep chasing, I kept developing. And so I can say right now, if you're talking about my life, where I'm at right now, I'm supposed to have a kid on the 25th of this month. It's my firstborn. And if you had talked to myself 6 years ago when I was in the trenches, man, you'd say, hey, well, what do you think about getting married or having kids? And I'd just say, are you kidding me, man? I hope to make it to next week. You know what I mean? Like, and now, you know, we're supposed to induce labor on Monday. I'm getting a little nervous, but you know, it's time to man up again, you know? So now it's like, I guess the third book could be Man Up, Father Up. I'm not sure. I'm not positive, but I know that setting that bar, you know, in front of myself and having that goalpost kind of moving on me, right? It's perpetual, man. Like there's no real finish line for me. And so, I think that's something really important. You know, we as men, there's no ceiling. And we can continue to keep getting better, right? Continue to like focusing on different elements. So where social life and family life was non-existent to me, here I am. You know, the kid's here, man. So like, and it kind of, wow, you know. But I mean, it seems like I had mentioned, you know, like if I didn't check off the sobriety thing first, this part wouldn't be possible. And I imagine when we talk in another couple years, brother, I'm going to have something else to tell you. That's some other goalpost that I'm aiming at. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And I just want to underline what you're saying, because I believe the same thing, where I think men grow through challenge, right? I believe women grow through relationship, and men grow through challenge. And the challenge is different. You know, I think for the young man, we always think of physical, right, or fitness challenges. And that's really important as a young man. But what you're about to take on is the challenge of responsibility, of love, of mentorship, of teaching, of presence. It's all this whole different realm besides just, hey, how far can you run? How much can you lift? You know?
Yeah, take it easy, man. You're making me a little nervous. That's a lot. I gotta work on that. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to do it. I mean, I don't have kids either, but me and my fiance are going to start trying later this year. So I'm in the same boat. I'm also heavily freaked out about what life is going to be like, you know.
Nice. Well, that's good to hear, man. Yeah.
Yeah, but I do think there is something very masculine. For me, it's the value of mastery, right? Of like getting better at stuff is mastery, right?
Yeah.
Like it's different stuff, right? When we're older, you know, if we get that far, it'll be about wisdom and about giving back and about, you know, presence, maybe spirituality, right? I think the challenge of the man changes. But I think we should always be seeking challenge, because that's how we grow. You know, I think the worst thing a man can be is complacent, you know, and too.
Ah, man. Or not trying.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, man, I mean, I fail a lot, but I feel a lot worse for guys that, you know, that don't get out there and get shot down or, you know, it's like that fate is much worse to me. And so, you know, maybe that's another element of what keeps me kind of moving, you know, towards a better direction is that, like, you know, I don't want to like die on the sidelines, man. You know, I'd rather be in there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many people like that, right? I think this is a whole other topic, but I think our modern culture has created a lot of critics and a lot of judgmental people. There's a lot of like consumers, right? People that are in the stands. So I'm always happy and inspired and honored to meet someone like you who's in the field, right? Like, even if you're losing, doesn't matter. Like, at least you're in the field, at least you're playing the game versus just being on the sidelines of being in the stands.
Yeah, man. There's a real value. Well, it's Winston Churchill, you know, the man in the arena. And to any of your listeners who haven't listened to that, man, that's a historical piece of art. And the bottom line is the glory belongs to the guy who's in there, who's bleeding, he's covered in sand. And it does not belong to the people that are up there like, he could have done better. Oh, he should have done this. Like, man, you get no points for that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of glad I get beat up often, you know, I get knocked around by some people that don't agree, but yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way, you know.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, something I tell my guys is that you should be failing like 30% of the time, right? Not, you know, not 50. That's probably like a little bit too hard, but not 10 because you're probably too easy. But like 30, you know, you got to be like working that edge. And in working that edge, we become sharper, right? That's how we kind of sharpen our tools and sharpen our mind and sharpen our body, is by just kind of always living on that edge of failure and success.
Yeah, I love that you quantified it. You know, that's a good target. I think 30% is a damn good target.
Yeah, because, you know, you don't want to fail too much, right? Because I mean, you do want to win, but you do got to be hitting that. So, Ryan, this is a phenomenal episode. You're super easy to talk to. Great conversation. Love your story. Love your books. All of that stuff is going to be in the show notes for our listeners. But where can people find you online if they want to just hear more of you and get to know you a little bit better?
Yeah, well, I have my website, ryanpinley.org. It's really just my book is there. But there's an author contact page. If you get on there and shoot me a message through email, I'll get back to you. Other than that, if you go on Facebook, My Rock Bottom Recovery is my page. You know, you get on there. There's a lot of people interacting. There's some, you know, a lot of sober material, if you will. So yeah, I mean, those are both really good ways. I mean, I'm not at some point in my life where I'm like, you know, not talking to people that want to talk to me, you know what I mean? Like, and so I'm glad to do so. Right. So I'm glad to, you know, whatever it might be, respond to an email, jump on a call, whatever it is, you can reach out those couple ways there. And I'd love to have a conversation or whatever unfolds.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's a real like personal touch, you know? So it's like, I'm saying it to our listeners, like, call this dude, right? Email him. You know, his stuff is out there. He'll pick up the phone. He'll respond. If you're looking for, you know, someone to motivate you or a mentor or an ally in sobriety, I think Ryan, guys. So certainly reach out to him and check out his stuff. So Ryan, again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Right on, man. I appreciate it, Mark.
Yeah, and to our listeners, if you enjoyed it, I mean, all the stuff, right? Like, subscribe, share, give this to somebody, send it to a man who is struggling with recovery or someone that, you know, really needs to hear the wisdom of moving one step at a time, you know, starting slow, starting small, and building that momentum. I think it's stuff that as men we need to hear 1,000 times. You know, I knew when I was in my kind of adolescent grandiosity, I wasn't ready to move slow. I wanted to go big or go hard, and that's what drove me into addiction. So I think I needed to hear this episode when I was younger. So again, thank you so much for joining me. Listeners, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week, another episode of the Men's Therapy Podcast.
Thank you for joining your host, Mark Agile, on the Men's Therapy Podcast. Be sure to tune in again live next Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel and anywhere podcasts are found. To support the show, leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. For more information or to apply to be a guest, visit www.menstherapypodcast.com.